Kia ora, I'm Maria. I'm Māori and Pākehā.
And I'm Kate, and I'm Iranian Australian.
And you're listening to Being Biracial.
It's the podcast about navigating the world as a biracial person.
We want to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on the unceded sovereign lands of the Boonwurrung and the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung peoples of the Eastern Kulin Nation.
And we offer our respect to the elders of these lands, past, present, and of course, those yet to come. We also want to acknowledge traditional custodians from the lands wherever this podcast is reaching you. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
On today's episode, we are going to be chatting to each other.
Yes, and I actually, as I was saying our little tagline, I was feeling a bit bad because we've actually had a rebrand.
To what?
So we had a live podcast event. You can go back and listen to that episode. And during that event, Aurelia St. Clair signed an apple for me. And on that apple, she said, biracial apples taste better. And I decided that that should be our new being biracial motto.
I think that gives less of an idea than the tagline we already have. A deeply inside joke.
And the apple isn't even biracial. So it's complicated. We're complicated gals.
What? How's that apple going?
Well, it's not moldy. And it's a bit awkward, to be honest, because Nauru's is over. Like, my half-seen table that I put out for the 2 weeks is done. I have gone down to throw my moldy-ass wheatgrass in the Maribyrnong, like the good Persian gal that I am. But I just am left with this apple. And so it just sits on my table at home. And sometimes people come to my house and they're like, what is this? And I'm like, that is Darcy Vesio's signature on an apple.
We flip it over the other side and it's the new being biracial catchphrase.
Exactly. And I've seriously contemplated, like, do I eat the apple?
I don't think that you should consume texture. I don't think that should be a thing that you eat.
Just feels like kind of a waste.
Well, how do we preserve it? You could, like, tan the skin or something, you know? Like.
Yes, yes. Dry the apple. Preserve the apple. Next year, again, a dried apple shall emerge. Who knows? I don't know. I really thought the biggest drama of my Nauru's was going to be my wheatgrass failing, and who knew it was going to be apple ownership?
Yeah, and, like, what to do with an apple signed by Aurelia St. Clair and Darcy Vesio?
Yeah, look, it's a big issue in my household. What did you think of Aurelia's show? We saw her at the comedy festival a few weeks ago.
Yep, and the show is called Can I Be Mean for a Minute? I loved it. I think we got a taster of Aurelia's comedy during our event at the round, but this was like the whole razzle dazzle. So it was really, really cool to see.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to do a best of show. I don't think I've ever seen a comedy show that's a best of. And really, I know Aurelia from the internet. Like, that's how she entered my consciousness, her, like, very cool quips about different Melbourne suburbs. And so it was awesome to kind of get a full Aurelia experience.
The full Aurelia experience. Yeah, exactly. She had a box like that you could put your mean things in, and, like, to be honest with you guys, we both chickened out. Like, we couldn't think of anything, like, on the night. So Kate, I want to ask you, what would your mean thing be that you'd put in the box?
Oh.
How mean is too mean?
I know, and that's the line that they very carefully towed in their show, which I was so impressed about. If I'm honest, it's that your boyfriend is kind of boring. And I obviously don't mean you.
Yeah, I don't have a boyfriend.
I just mean broadly. That's probably my overwhelming feeling. What's your mean thought? Be meaner than me so I don't feel guilty.
Okay, I agree with your mean thought. First things first. My mean thing, yeah, is probably actually pretty mean too. And again, this isn't applicable to everybody. oh God, I feel weird saying it, but okay, I'm going to do it. No, I'm going to do it. But my main thing is that sometimes I think people have babies because they like can't think of what else to do. Like, especially straight people, I think they're just like, oh, well, I'm like, you know, the managing director of the XYZ and like I've got no more promotions to get. And like, also I kind of hate my job and would love to go on mat leave. Like, I don't think that's a reason to have a kid, babe.
But like, you do get to your 30s and you're like, what else is there?
I know, it's like, I would love to have a year off, like raising a tiny little present that looked like me, but like also no, I don't want to have children.
Instead of having children, Maria and I birthed Being Biracial Podcast.
A long labor.
Very long labor.
So Comedy Fest has been going on and I'm seeing so many shows, dude.
I know. I am at show number, I think, 8.
Have you seen 8 already?
I've already seen 8 shows.
Holy shit. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen 7 maybe off the top of my head. Still have a bunch to go. Like 5. I'm seeing 5 this week, which is crazy. I have a job. But I feel like my comedy like fest picks have been like falling into 3 different categories.
Mm.
So it's like Kiwi comedians, got to support the Kiwis who come out. Biracial comedians, Aurelia falls into that bracket. Aurelia also falls into the next one, queer comedians.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's no one that's all 3, but which I would love to find. If you're out there, hello, give me a call. But we've also seen Lizzie Hu. Oh my God, we saw Lizzie Hu's show.
Yes. Who's that girl?
She's so funny.
I know. It was a bit mortifying because we arrived a little late. I mean, not so late that she had started, but we were seated quite far up the back, I would say. And after the show, we were having a chat to her and she was like, I could hear you guys laughing. We were like, we were so far away from you.
I'm so embarrassed that our cackles are so identifiable by the comedians on the stage.
But it was great. I mean, I didn't know that I needed a show where someone talks about shitting on ABC radio, but it turns out I did.
I did need a show. Yeah. Lizzie provided it. I think the thing about Lizzie is that she's fucking funny. Like in everything that she does, she's telling funny little stories. She talked about her dad, Chan, a couple times. She delivered the Hassan joke.
Yes.
Oh, did she deliver that? And like she talked about a whole bunch of other things, but I think it's even down to like her facial expressions and her pauses that like bring her comedy to like another level.
Yeah, her physicality is really impressive, I think. And I think for me personally, I could listen to someone tell stories about their family for 10 hours straight and not get bored. Like family gossip is why we create this podcast and it is a huge part of what Lizzie Hu talks about. And so I love her. And it felt like it was written for me too, I think, because it also was partially like a bit of a breakup show and I went through a breakup last year. And so I was like, girl, preaching to the choir. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Another breakup show that we went and saw, well, another one that touched on breakups was Rose Matafeo.
Yeah, I think On and On and On. Is that yes. What it was called?
Yep.
Yeah. I, to be honest, I think Rose's show was my standout of the comedy festival thus far. I don't want, I'm kind of calling it for me. I have 2 more shows to see, but it was so good. And I think like the premise of the show was like the deranged place that is our notes app for our generation. If you don't have a smartphone, I'm sending this out to my personal parents and no one else who is listening to this podcast. If you don't have a notes app because you don't have a smartphone, basically it is a place where our generation writes all their crazy thoughts. So it's a place that includes your shopping list, that link that someone sent you one time for shoes that you should buy. It includes like a text message that you have crafted to a friend who you maybe need to go through a friendship breakup with. It includes like 3 a.m. thoughts in your Uber ride home that you mm-hmm. need to document. And that's what Rose talked about. And that is all I think about.
I know. I just opened my own notes app to be like, what's in here? There's literally a notes app that has a note that has nothing else but nice white parents. I don't know why.
I know. It's a podcast that I've recommended to you.
That's what that means. Okay, I'm just going to write that in there. podcast, Rick from Cape. Yeah, because that really, no context. What does that mean?
I know. And so I just, it just felt so beautiful. I think for, like, we're chronically on the internet. Aurelia is, Rose is. Mm. That was just like such a beautiful starting point for a show. And then she got into the biracial comedy.
Oh my God. And she would have been able to hear our laughter from the stage because we were fucking eating that bit up. Like, as soon as she was like, I'm mixed race, we were like, woo! Like screaming. But no, we weren't. We weren't. We're a nice audience people to have.
Okay? Yeah.
Invite us to your shows. But it was so funny. The bit that she did about being mixed race was that, like, she was kind of a child actor in the 90s, early 2000s. And so she was like a cute little mixed race kid. The role.
Was she actually a child actor? Is that what she was saying? Or was she just saying that, like, her future potential was not reached because she grew up in the wrong era?
I think it's a bit of both. Because she did become really, like, she became really onto the comedy scene when she was, like, 17 or something.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. She was, New Zealand gal.
I know. Yeah. Just New Zealand things. But she was talking about, yeah, being, like, a mixed race child actor and how there was, like, not the roles around. And, like, now, everywhere. There's mixed race families everywhere. Kmart, mixed race family. Every time you turn on the TV, like, there's no four white families. Like, there's always one brown parent, one white parent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a boom.
It is. It is. So here's to that.
Yeah, we'd love to see it.
Can't be what you can't see.
Come on, tokenism. You've really done a good solid for us now.
No, it's true. Like, when I watch Netflix, I'm like, every single actor in Heartbreak High is seemingly mixed race. Not yeah. every single, but a high proportion. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, we love that for them. Yeah, Rose's show was just, like, really, really funny. And like, we love her. Like, we've talked about her on this podcast before. We've both, like, idolized her since before, you know, Starstruck, her show, came out. Like, yeah, it was really cool to see her together. So I feel like you've seen her before, right?
Yeah, I saw her a few years ago before she moved to London. And I think she won, like, Best Newcomer or something at that comedy festival. And the show was really great. It was really a lot about K-pop and her obsession with K-pop. I know, so it was quite different to see her set this time being about the Notes app, but also being about breakups and also, you know, touching on key cultural issues like Miss Moju.
Oh, top 10 romantic moments.
Yeah, I don't know if you're not across this weird part of the internet, basically. Like, if you YouTube, if you're like just having a Sunday and you're like, who am I thinking about? Meg Ryan. And then you're thinking about, like, what are the five best Meg Ryan movies? You might type that into YouTube and then Miss Moju will basically take over your life and all you want is to just, like, watch those clips back to back, and instead she will describe what you're going to see, and then you'll only end up watching, like, 1 minute of clip instead of, like, the full clip because she's too busy talking over it. It's so annoying. I love that Rose talked about that.
Yeah, another thing that I love that she talked about was just even being mixed race. Like, I was so surprised that she talked about it. Like, I know a lot of comedians do talk about race, but, like, in my mind, Rose Metafoe isn't one of those comedians.
Something we've talked about on the podcast before is this idea that, like, conversations about race have moved on. And I've really felt that in a lot of these shows with the biracial comedians. Like, I think every single show has had a race joke because, like, of course, it's their experience. Mm. And our families are fucking funny. And the dynamics of living with duality are hilarious. Mm. And so I've really enjoyed it, but it hasn't been the sole focus of any show that I've seen. It's been a little segment. So that's been interesting because I've definitely in previous years seen shows that are entirely about race.
I mean, yeah, like, we've both seen those shows, right, where it's all about race. But, yeah, I feel like something's different about this year. Conversation seems to be moving on. Still talking about it, but not as much. I like it. Who else have you seen that's biracial during Comedy Fest?
I've also seen Nina Oyama.
Ooh, Nina Oyama's show is called Is Coming.
Yeah, she's direct. I would say a very sexual show. Don't take your mum, Maria.
A bit horny. A horny one. I'm going to see it next week. Or this week. This week, I'm going to see it this week.
Yeah, she is half Japanese and she is an actor as well and was in Deadlock. Have you seen Deadlock?
No, tell me about it.
It's a TV show that's basically like a lesbian cop drama set in Tasmania.
I love gay people, yes.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, Australian TV classically, like, you know, that just everyday thing is happening and then there's 10 dead bodies and let's get into it. But I think the really cool thing about Deadlock is that it has a bunch of comedians in it. Tom Ballard is also in it. Mm. It's set in like a Tasmanian town where basically there is like a cultural awakening kind of happening because a bunch of like very progressive mainland lesbians have moved to the town and they just like want to create a really cool art scene and culture. And that is like in direct conflict with the like small town footy vibe. And when I say footy, I mean AFLM, not AFLW. So I love watching those kinds of things play out in a small country town, and Nina is in it and wonderful. And so that's why I went to see the show, because I'm a huge fan of hers, and it really lived up to expectations. I went to a preview show actually, and she just like giggles at herself, and which was one of my favorite things when comedians like break that like fourth wall or whatever, and was kept on saying things like, okay, that might not make the cut, like that might not make the real show, but thanks for being here for the first try. And I love that so deeply.
Did she talk about being mixed race at all?
Yeah, she did talk about like the experience of being racially profiled as a mixed race person when you're leaving the club.
You can't spoil too much of it for me as well, because I am going to see it on Thursday.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. All right, I won't tell you the punchline, but didn't know that was something I needed covered, and very glad that she did.
So we're actually going to be chatting to Nina really soon, which we're really excited about. So homework for me and also the people who are listening, if you haven't already watched Deadlock, give it a little watch. Nina's on the telly. We're going to be chatting to her about being mixed race soon. So excited. Other comedy fest things. I saw a bunch of other people as well, but none of them are mixed race. So we could yap on for ages about the comedy fest. But actually, I did take my mum, because my mum has been here.
Oh my God. Yeah. After last time?
Yeah, my mum has been here. Last year when my mum was here, she always comes around Easter because she gets like a bunch of time off for less time off, if that makes sense. And last year we took her to see Diana Nguyen. And that was a horny show. Speaking of horny shows, that was a really horny show. And we were sitting there the whole time being like, oh, fuck. We've taken little old Raywin to see this deeply horny show.
It was not a vibe.
Sorry, Mom. She loves you, though. She loves you.
Yeah, that was the first time I met her, and I just had to sit next to her while she watched, like, Diana Nguyen make a bunch of sex jokes about Keanu Reeves.
Which we love, Diana Nguyen. But, yeah, I took her to, like, a nice white lady this time.
Good job. Look at you learning.
Yeah.
Who did you take her to see?
We went and saw Melanie Bracewell. So she's a New Zealand comedian. I've seen her before, and she's really funny. She's a show on Channel 10 called Cheap Seats. And she's very funny. The whole show was centered around losing her AirPods. And she like sent messages to the person that she, it was really funny. Like, again, speaking of mysteries, it was a mystery, and the mystery got solved during the show, but they loved it. It was delightful. My mum came over with her friend Pauline, and they were here for like not even a week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So it was like a real quick run. And normally when my mum comes over, she comes over by herself and she like stays at my house, and we just like lay around and like go for little walks, and like she crochets and pets my cat. Like, so this time when she had her friend there, it was a bit of a different dynamic. They were staying in town. So I wasn't able to like spend as much like quality time with my mum as I normally would.
Oh no.
So it was a bit of an odd trip. But I did take her to see Threads. I took both of them to see Threads.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What did she think?
You should see Kate's face. She looks so worried.
Well, I don't know, because when my mum saw Threads, she just instantly cried. And I was like, I was not prepared for that reaction.
So my mum said before it, she was like, as we were walking into Mub Museum, keeping in mind that it was the second museum that we'd been to that day. And it had already been a long day, but when we walked in there, my mum was like, is this going to be like that choir thing? And so
what's that choir thing?
Yeah, the choir thing is that I think I've talked about it before, but when I was like seven or eight, really young, at primary school, there was like a like audition held for like a solo in this mass choir thing. Yeah, I see her. Kate's remembering.
Yes, I remember. I remember.
Yeah. So Mum didn't know that I got the solo, and it was in Te Reo Māori, which is why I got the solo. Although I am a mean singer, by the way. But my mum didn't know. I didn't tell her. I don't know why. Probably because I was like ashamed. And so Mum was coming to this choir thing that she knew I was in, but she thought I was just one of the people amongst all of the people, right? And then little old me steps out into the little spotlight and Mum bursts into tears. So she, yeah, yeah.
Oh, because you were doing a solo or because you were singing in today?
Oh, because I was doing a solo. Raywin. So she was like, is it going to be like that choir thing again where I didn't know that you were coming out and I cried? And I was like, I mean, you do know that this is happening and we specifically came here to watch this, but would love it if you cried. So the bothersome thing about it is that while we were in there, Pauline sat in between Mum and I.
Oh, is that your mum's friend?
Yeah. So I was like, why are you sitting here? I would like to be sitting by my mum. And then all of the seats kind of got gradually taken up as we were in there. Yeah, there
was lots full of
people. Because it was school holidays. So there were people running around. And it was really cute. As we were walking in, we caught the end of it. And because there's a couple of things on loop at the Learning Lab at Melbourne Museum. And we caught the end of it. And then I heard a dad telling like his kids, he was like, oh, that's Kate Robinson and Maria Birchmoranga. And I was like, ah, that's me. That's actually me.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute.
Yeah, it was really cute. So there was lots of people in the room, which was cute, but then also Pauline was sitting in between me and Mum, and I was like, excuse me, what the hell?
And so I am giving the biggest death stare right now.
I was just like, I really, like, this is like a highly personal piece of art that Kate and I have made that like mentions Mum, and like I want to be like close to her. So like I literally like, it started, and then I stood up and like gave her, like hugged her around the top, but she didn't cry, as I could see while we were in there, and she was like, oh, that was lovely. That's what she said before we went as well. She was like, am I in it? And I was like, no. And she was
but
like,
baby Maria is.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, Mum, I would tell you if you were going to be in it. And then one of the other things that she said, my mum's like not very communicative about her emotions. So like she was kind of like afterwards, she was like, I thought the boys would be in it, like my brothers. And I was like, Mum, we're at the Melbourne Museum. I'm not just going to randomly put pictures of all of you guys in it. Like I'm going to talk about you guys, but like I'm not going to like, just, and you would know if I put you in it, you know.
But also like you tell a story about your family in it. So like they're mentioned, but yeah, like no photo of Jason and Greg is included.
I know, exactly. But I was like, one of the things that I told her about was I was like, well, you are in it. And she's like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, the flowers at the end, that is from the cushion that you made me. And she's like, oh.
Oh, that's so cute. The little flying flowers.
Yeah, the little flying flowers. And I was also like, oh, did you see Nana's Book of Threats as well? And she's like, oh, that's what that was. And she's like, yeah, I did see that. And yeah. And she's like, oh, that photo is from Kirio Bay, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it was quite cute.
I'm so glad you got to take her. That's so nice.
It's really special. But also I wish that her friend wasn't there. If you're listening to this, Pauline, I hate you. Can I be mean for a minute?
Oh my gosh.
She won't be listening, but she was also kind of racist. Not my mum. Pauline.
Oh my gosh. In what way?
So we went to this dumpling house and we were just like, after we saw the comedy show, and like I piled on a bunch of chili oil and like I got this bean thing that had a bunch of chilies on it. And my mum was like, oh, I can't really eat chilies. And then Pauline was like, oh, here's a story about chilies. She was like, so the only brown person, I can't remember, she was always mentioning ethnicities. It was one of those things. But I think she said whatever their ethnicity was, but I wasn't listening. She was like, oh, this brown person from my work says that white people can't handle spice. And I was like, yeah. Because that's true. Because it's like mainly true. And she was like, no one gets to tell me what to do. So I just eat the spice. I rebelled against it and was like, don't stereotype me for being a white person. I know. I fucking know.
And just eat your chili and shut up, Pauline.
No. Well, and so she did eat the chili. And she was like, so I just sat there and ate it quietly. And I was like, oh, I bet you were crying the whole time. She was like, no, I was being really quiet. And it was fine. And she was like, but my stomach paid for it. And I was like, so what you're saying is that white people can't eat spicy food?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I just have so few of those people in my life that it feels really abrasive when you're like chucked back into that kind of conversation.
I know.
And you're just trying to eat a dumpling with your mum.
I know. So the next time that my mum comes over, I'm like formally requesting that she like comes over by herself, because I'm like, mum, that was really hard. I just wanted to like hang with you on my couch. And here we are walking around 1 million museums and talking about how white people can't handle spice. And I don't want to have that conversation.
Oh my god, it's so weird listening to music that isn't from Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter.
Oh my god. I'm in a hole, guys. I wouldn't call it a hole. I would call it a cozy safe nest. And that cozy safe nest is Cowboy Carter blasting through any and all available audio places straight into my ears.
Yeah, I exclusively, since it came out, I've just been only listening to this album on repeat. And it's really interesting for me because I was one of the skeptics. I was like, country music, for me personally, it's not a vibe.
Yeah, but Daddy listens off Lemonade.
I know. I think because I grew up in country Victoria, I've listened to a lot of boring country.
True. That's so true.
And what I have learnt is that a Beyoncé country album is not a Kilmore RSL country album.
It's still a Beyoncé album. And like we have to talk about it. We've got to talk about it.
Yeah, I know it's not really about being biracial, but sorry, neither was Taylor Swift.
Yeah. And we've actually banned ourselves from talking about Taylor Swift, so.
One and only reference done.
At least Beyoncé is a person of colour, or a black woman, right? So, okay, Kate, what are your top three songs?
Okay, Bodyguard. The least country song on the album, I would say, which is quite funny because it follows Texas Hold'em, which is, I would say, the most country song on the album.
Yep.
And I guess, okay, from the top, I'm going to say the Beyoncé album must be listened to start to finish.
Yes. It's a listening experience.
Yes. And it, like, I actually now, if my phone just magically is on shuffle and then the wrong next song comes on, I'm like, no, it's too abrasive because she has written an entire hour of an experience for us. And so we must listen in order. So yeah, Bodyguard, I love so much. And I think it's partially because Texas Hold'em was one of the songs that was out pre-album launch.
Yes.
And so it was like the song that people were like fixating on. It was all over the internet. Everyone's videos, great. Love, listen to it to death. And so now like, it's such a banger of a song, but it's not like my top song. Mm-hmm. But then one of my top songs comes right after it.
Yep. And it's a sexy little song. I love it.
Yeah, I think I actually heard Aurelia talking about Bodyguard, and I don't know if – I haven't fact-checked this, but they were talking about the fact that it's maybe written about Beyoncé's bodyguard.
Yeah, that she's had for like 22 years, Julian.
Yeah, maybe something has gone on between the two of them.
Oh, I would love that. I would eat that up.
I know, exactly. Who knows? Maybe it's just about being a protector. But yeah, Bodyguard is in my top three for sure.
Yeah, I would. Me too, yeah.
It's in yours?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay, great. I would say Yaya.
Okay, yeah, that's also in my Okay. Weird. No, Yaya. Fuck, man. What the hell? There's a line in Yaya which I think is like the thesis statement of the whole album.
Ooh.
Like she's like, whole lot of red in that white and blue. History can't be erased.
So what does that mean to you?
So she's saying that like America, if we think about red, white, and blue, the yes. American flag has a lot of blood on it. And history can't be replaced. In my mind, if I'm thinking about Cowboy Carter as an album, from the title to the visual, to the like, you know, visuals that she's released relating to it, it's all about reclaiming country as something that black people created. It can't be erased.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about the visuals, do you mean like the album cover?
Yeah, like the album cover when she released the track list. as well. When she released the track list, she released it in this like style of poster. It was like black, again, colors of the American flag, with black and yellow. And it was actually modeled after, it's a really heavy reference to the Chitlin Circuit. And this isn't something that I knew before that came out. The Chitlin Circuit was a network of entertainment venues that black people could perform at during Jim Crow segregation era.
Oh.
Yeah, there's so many things in this album. Like, it's just so layered. And it just, like, teaches things, right? Yaya is the interstitial, like, the little interlude before Yaya, the one where Linda Martell talks about genre.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of my favorite lines from the entire album for sure. It says, like, genre is a funny little concept. And I just love that because it's literally what Beyoncé is doing with this album, but also what she did with Act One, mm-hmm. Renaissance. So I love that she's just stating it so clearly, and she's getting Linda Martell to state it. So Linda Martell, she was actually the first commercially successful black woman in country music, but she only made one album.
What?
I know, because she was dropped by her label.
Ugh.
I know, and she's talked a lot about the racism that she experienced being in the country music scene. And so it's Beyoncé. So she's elevating these people in her album. And given where the genesis of this album comes from, which is the 2016 CMAs.
Oh, yeah, the Country Music Awards. So Daddy Listens, we mentioned that song before. It's a song off Lemonade, a country song off Lemonade. It features the Chicks, formerly known as the Dixie Chicks. And Beyoncé did a performance at the Country Music Awards with the Dixie Chicks, or with the Chicks, of Daddy Listens. And that was a huge, it's a fucking rip-roarer of a performance. I love it. And I remember when it came out. And right after, the whole CMAs were put on YouTube, and that video, that performance was taken off because of the racial vilification that was aimed at Beyoncé. It was like, you don't belong here, all of this stuff. And the CMAs folded to it. And so she was like, this isn't a space for me, but this is a space for me. And this is her 8 fucking years later coming back and being like, you bitches, I'm going to be at the top of the country charts, the pop charts. I'm going to be at the top of all of those charts with this fucking country album. You can't tell me what's country and what's not.
Yeah. And I love so deeply that in Yaya, she's like, I'm going to sample the Beach Boys. I'm going to sample Nancy Sinatra. Like, of course, I'm gonna recreate genre, which is what she always does. And it's what's so cool for me is that, like, I have been obsessed with Beyoncé since I was a teenager. Mm. Like, Destiny's Child days, moving on up. There's like a really funny photo actually that my parents have, like, of me standing in front of my like teenage bedroom wall with all my posters in the background. And there are some questionable posters on that wall, like Ashton Kutcher.
Love that.
Ew. Like the Hilary Duffs of the world. But thank God there's like a giant Beyoncé poster and a giant Alicia Keys poster, really bringing it back around for me.
Yep.
Because I still love both of those artists.
Love, love, love.
But I think it's just been so cool because this like 3-act trilogy journey that she's on started with Renaissance, now with Cowboy Carter, Act 3, TBC.
Mm-hmm.
It's just at each moment she redefines what it means to create a Beyoncé album.
Yeah.
And she completely reimagines genre in ways that like is challenging.
Yeah.
Like I'm initially like, "Oh, I don't think I'm going to listen to this country album." And then I obsessively listen to it to the point that now I want to have an in-depth discussion about every single lyric. She's like, "Can you hear me?" And I'm like, "Beyoncé, I can hear you."
Now we're listening to it so much that I can't stop being like, look at that horse, look at that.
And actually Maria changed in our messenger chat, Maria added an effect so that anytime, because we were texting it to each other so frequently, anytime one of us texts, look at that horse, like horses fly across the screen.
Yeah, I go off Facebook Messenger, that's my favorite thing about it. But look at that horse. I said it in a work meeting and I was like, fuck my life. I'm supposed to be professional. Why am I saying look at that horse? else because it's stuck in my brain. It's all I can think about.
It's all I can think about.
What's your third song?
Oh my gosh. Well, why don't we say our third song at the same time?
What if they're different ones though?
Okay.
Because we can't, two out of three is two.
Okay, all right.
Well, you go first.
Mine is Tyrant. What's yours?
Okay, Tyrant's a fucking sick song. Mine, sometimes it changes. Two Hands to Heaven. Riverdance. But Tyrant is a really interesting one. I think a thing that Beyonce does, aside from like layering artistry, teaching the children everything, I think a thing that she does is she like kind of raps like devastating lyrics in like a really danceable beat, like in a song that distracts you from the lyrics. So like Tyrant, some of the lyrics from Tyrant are Hangman, your hands are steady and you sleep at night. How did you turn your heart to stone? Literally, she's asking a hangman how he sleeps after he lynches people. Right? And it's like, I'm a tyrant. Like, you're just like bopping and being like, woo, woo, woo. Yeah, I can ride it. What the fuck? What? What the hell? Yeah, I'm so obsessed with it. Like, the homework that Beyonce's going to be doing, speaking of homework, got to watch Deadlock. Beyonce's going to be doing a lot of homework. Like, did you know that the banjo came from West Africa?
No.
And I didn't fucking know that either until the lead up to Cowboy Carter. Because she's teaching the children. Like, honestly, I've learned so, so much. I learned that Blackbird, the Beatles song.
Oh, yeah. I think, to be honest, I reckon Blackbird is probably my fourth favorite song. Love it's that. Such a beautiful song. And it's like early in the album, like it's in the soft part of the album.
Yes. And it features, again, like if we're talking about bringing people to the table, like Linda Martell, who didn't get her flowers, or maybe didn't get her flowers in her time, bringing her back to the table. On Blackbird, we have four black country artists who may have felt how Beyonce felt at the Country Music Awards. We've got Tana Adele, Brittany Spencer, Tiara Kennedy, and Raina Roberts, and they're fucking beautiful. It's beautiful to hear them sing a song that was written by a white man in, like, what, the fucking 60s, about black woman.
I know. Yeah, I didn't realize that. I guess it just shows the extent of my imagination. When I thought, what will Beyonce do on this album? I didn't imagine that rethinking a Beatles song, rethinking Paul McCartney's lyrics would be on the bingo card. And here she is.
Well, I think that she didn't even change any of the lyrics to Blackbird. I think that the song is literally about black woman. And it just uses symbolism to communicate that.
Yeah, it is a like 1960s civil rights like movement song. And so I love that she's given it that country music twist.
Yeah, it's incredible. And then brought everybody to the table as well. The other, the reimagined one is Jolene, right?
Ooh!
Yeah, get her.
I know. I mean, as soon as Dolly Parton starts talking about Becky with the good hair, I'm like, get it. Absolutely get it. And I love that Beyonce has reimagined Jolene and reimagined the lyrics to apply to her situation.
Yeah, go off, get it. And I think another really smart thing that she's done is she like, you excluded me from this genre before. You've done this to me before, like Nashville and the country music scene. But can you do this to me now when I've got Dolly Parton on one shoulder and I got Willie Nelson on the other? Your besties, your idols, they're here saying, I'm country. Get it. Get with the program. Okay, so YA girly, our resident YA girly. Do you have any, have you seen any of the discourse about what people think Act 3 would be?
Oh, wait, what does this have to do with YA?
No, because Act 1, 2, 3.
Oh, like YA books are always trilogies.
Yeah.
I did not even think about that. No, I have no idea what Act 3 is. Do you know what Act 3 is?
Okay, so because I'm so deeply chronically online, I may need to throw my phone out of a building. But the streets are saying that it's going to be a rock album.
What?
Yeah, yeah. And so there's a few, like, I feel like, I don't want to say that Beyonce has been to Taylor Swift's school of Easter eggism, but she's really been dropping some clues. So there's a few clues in Cowboy Carter itself. That like,
oh
yeah, that and that float that it might be a rock album. So one, we've got Chuck Berry. He's sampled on the album twice.
Oh,
you know that Maybelline.
Oh yeah,
yeah, that's him. And then also, Oh Louisiana is an interpolation of one of his songs.
Oh
yeah, yeah. And so Chuck Berry is the actual father of rock and roll, not Elvis. And many of Elvis's like popular songs are actually Chuck Berry songs.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so he stole them.
Some people would be like, no, he like paid copyright and stuff. But it's like,
okay.
Did he? Yeah.
I watched Priscilla. I'm no longer a fan of Elvis. That guy doesn't need to get any credit for anything.
I don't think he ever was. And one of the other things is that in the imagery for Cowboy Carter, she's referenced Black Betty. So if we think about Black Betty, the song that comes to mind, because we're in Australia, like, is
Black Betty.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so like there's been many iterations of that song. But what a lot of people don't know is that it actually was written by a black man as a work song. Right. So like when they were slaves, they had work songs. It was written by a black man. Lead Belly was his like performance name. And yeah.
Where is she referenced Black Betty in the imagery?
It was, I think it might have been on the Chitlin Circuit, one of the Chitlin Circuit posters that she put out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so imagery. So there's little crumbs that hint that it might be a rock album. And I also think if we're thinking about like the reclamation journey that she's on, like, you know, saying that house music came from like queer black culture, saying that country came from, you know, black people. Again, rock is the same thing. Yeah, I think it would round it out really nicely.
I think so. I also really love that, I don't know if you know this, but apparently Cowboy Carter was supposed to be act one.
Oh, love, yeah.
Yeah, and she decided though, like, we've been in pandemic times. The people need a dancing, like, get up on your tables album. And so that's why she released Renaissance first, because Beyonce, she's doing it for the people.
She's really reading the room. Bless her. Bless her. What I hope is that she tours for Cowboy Carter, because we're going to jump on that shit.
Oh my gosh. It is one of my biggest life regrets that I have not seen Beyonce in concert.
We love live music and we want to see Beyonce.
All I want for Christmas is to see Beyonce.
Please.
We actually had a really cute live music moment recently together.
But closer to home.
Yeah, we shed some tears together.
So we went to an event in Footscray, put on by Creative West, and it featured Jen Clower.
We're going to interview Jen in a future episode.
Yes, we're so excited. So Jen is Māori and Pākehā and is a musician.
Oh, Maria, your mix.
I know. I'm like someone who's not my family with my mix. I'm actually kind of like intimidated.
Really? Why are you intimidated?
Well, I'm intimidated because like sometimes I'm like really shit at saying Māori words and I feel nervous about not saying it.
Jen seems so nice.
Oh, and it was a fucking cool performance too. Like, it was really, really cool. So Jen has recently come out with an album last year called I Am the River, The River Is Me. And so in Te Reo Māori it is, wait, hold on, A-E-O. I'm sounding out the vowels. O. Ko o te awa, ko te awa, ko o. So I am the river, the river is me. Look at me, go.
Woo!
And the album is about being Indigenous, queer, and hope for the future. Like, it's actually, it's beautiful. I've got to slip it back into the rotation. I've got to, you know, take Cowboy Carter, but pull Cowboy Carter back up a little bit, put Jen album back in there, because, again, homework. And so Jen has been touring her album in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh!
And she's been touring with a Kaba Haka group.
Yeah, and they were at the performance. And maybe actually, do you want to explain what a Kapa Haka group is for people that don't know?
Yes. So a Kapa Haka group is a Māori performing arts group. And kapa means form a line and haka means dance. So yeah, get together and dance, guys. And so
like haka, like the All Blacks. Okay.
So a Kapa Haka group could be doing haka like the All Blacks, the rugby team, the New Zealand rugby team. They could be singing waiata, so singing songs, or performing with poi, so those little balls on the end of strings. And they did all three of those things. So the Kapa Haka group is Te Honunga o Ngā Iwi, or Te Hone, and they are a Kapa Haka group that I think is based on the eastern suburbs. And a bunch of them were there alongside Jen performing some of the songs, and it was so cool.
Yeah, because she has like a full band, and then she also had like people on horns, and then she also had the Kabaka group. And I was like, girl, how many people will you get on this stage? I am thrilled to be here. Like a full body experience.
I know. And they performed at the Opera House last year, I think. Yeah, it's been a big tour. And I think this might have been the last show that they had together. So I'm so stoked that I managed to catch the whole shebang. And I haven't actually seen a Kapahaka group perform like since I lived in New Zealand.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like so long ago. And like seeing them perform, like they did this gorgeous thing where they were like, let's all do a haka together. Like everybody who was at the event, let's do one together. And they taught us a haka and they were like, is anyone here Māori? And I was like, me.
Yeah, they were like giving Maria eyes.
And I was just there being like, yeah, I can do a pukana. A pukana is like a face that you pull to like be intimidating. And like obviously I've got a mean pukana, like my face is made for it. I'll put up a photo of it of how to do it on our Instagram. But yeah, when I was doing my pukana, one of the girls like pointed at me and was like, oh, and I was like, hello.
Scene.
Yeah, it was actually quite emotional. So they did a haka. They taught everybody a haka and we did it all together, which was gorgeous. And they sang a few songs as well. And some of them I knew. So I was singing along.
I know, Maria was thrilled to be singing along. And it made me like light up as well. Because there is something so special about recognizing. And I think in the context of like us and our mixed race journeys, like literally just recognizing a song from your culture, that's everything.
Yeah. It's huge. It's actually huge.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Being Biracial.
Being Biracial is hosted, edited, and produced by us, Kate Robinson and Maria Birch-Moranga.
The music that you're listening to is The Green Twins, and this is their absolutely incredible song, Take It Slow.
This podcast was created here on the lands of the Kulin Nation.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Look at that horse.
Look at that horse.